Welcome to iPod, the College of Optometrists podcast, where we explore the profession and the fascinating world of vision and eye care, discover new ideas and research, and learn from others' experiences. Today, it's with me, Denise Voon, clinical advisor to the college. And as it's October, we're celebrating Black History Month. This is where we collectively recognise the contributions of Black people to British society and globally. And the theme this year is Saluting Our Sisters, specifically celebrating and highlighting the achievements of Black women. So I'm so pleased to be joined by Chidima and Adaku. Welcome, ladies, and I'll let you introduce yourselves.
Thank you for having me today. My name is Chidima Uyinezido. I'm an optometrist currently working in Specs Evers and Dis.
Thank you so much, Denise. I'm Dr. Adaku Eze, currently working with Specs Evers Mansfield, and also the founder of the charity Vision Arcade Eye Care Foundation. And basically, we just work or provide eye care across West Africa.
Brilliant. So it sounds like you are working in sort of fairly similar fields at the moment. But I'm just curious, can you tell our listeners sort of where did you study optometry? And when did you come to the UK?
I studied optometry in Nigeria. So I got into uni in 2009. I finished in 2015, where I studied Doctor of Optometry back in Nigeria. So I finished my pre-reg in 2017 and started working as a qualified optometrist. So I had worked for a while in Nigeria and decided to move to the UK because I'm pretty sure the practice here is well advanced. And I went to use the opportunity to also advance myself in getting to know more about optometrists and also getting to new environment as well. So then I had to go through the process of the GOC scrutiny, registration, and when I was done, I was given a go-ahead to go through the pre-reg in 2001. So I moved into the UK in September 2001 and finished my pre-reg in January 2003. Yeah, yes. A year and 5 months, sorry.
No, so you're actually pretty new to UK optometry.
Yes, very new.
Brilliant. How about you, Adaku?
Oh, yeah. I'm an old one. So I studied optometry in Nigeria as well, Abia State University, 2002. Graduated about 2008. Time has flown, really. I've lost count. And I've actually been in the UK for over 10 years now. When I did my conversion, basically, we just submitted our portfolio just to say the categories of patients you've seen and to meet the required competencies. And then we did the English exams. And after that, we had to sit for like a practical exam, which is equivalent to the OSCEs, but slightly more complicated. And then once we passed that, we were actually allowed to just start practicing. So that's my story with regards to transitioning.
Well, so actually, even within the time that you both qualified, the requirements for studying in the UK have changed. So Chidima, you did the scheme for registration as our current students will be doing now.
Yes, I went through, yes, the scheme of registration.
And did you find, how did you both find it? Did you find it sort of quite easy to transition following your degree in Nigeria?
I mean, I found it easier because most of the things most of the patients we see and most of the cases we see is somebody that is familiar with me or familiar to me back home in Nigeria. So the thing I found a bit difficult was being a student again. Because I know I had to come back from work and study. So it took me a while to get into the habit of studying every night and going through assessments again. But I was finally able to go through my pre-reg program successfully.
Yeah, brilliant. And Adaku, I guess it was slightly different for you because it wasn't quite so involved.
Yeah, it was quite different. Exciting, challenging at the same time, like every good thing. Nothing good comes easy. I think with regards to the transitioning, because we had to come in and go straight, obviously, to take the exams after we've passed the initial assessment, I think one of the things I had to learn is to change my scope of practice, because in Nigeria, our scope of practice was slightly wider because it's the Doctor of Optometry, or Doctor of Optometry, yeah. But within the UK, obviously, the scope of practice was slightly different. So knowing and mastering that barrier, or I wouldn't call it barrier, but just to know that scope of practice is slightly different, it's something I had to have at the back of my mind, and then the need to make sure that I refer where needed, instead of managing. So I think that's the only thing really, but it's same eye care all over the world, isn't it? So yeah.
Well, and did you have the same experience, Chidima?
Yes. Before coming to the UK, I had to read about the practice in the UK, and I had to understand that, I know back home, we the job description or our scope of practice included glaucoma referrals, sometimes glaucoma management, and sometimes IPs as well, medical retina. So it had to do with a lot of things that I couldn't practice here, except I would have to do some further studying to do to practice here.
That must have been quite difficult to sort of know, have a patient who sat in front of you and you think, oh yes, I could manage this, or back in Nigeria, I would have managed this, but actually it's not something that you can keep in practice. Yes, it must have been quite difficult to change your mindset in that way.
Yes, yeah. At first, the first few weeks, I'd had to learn which I should do or I could do and which I couldn't. So when I see a case, I'm like, okay, I can't manage this. I have to send this off to the hospital. So, but it took me a while to start getting used to what to refer and what I could manage here.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. So it's not even that you need to kind of learn your glaucoma knowledge, for instance, particularly. Mm-hmm. It's about sort of at which point can I keep them in practice and at which point. And it's that sort of learning that you were finding.
Yes, that as well.
Right, and did you sort of find any challenges when you retrained in the UK? Did you find it sort of quite difficult to adapt to working in the UK? I mean, apart from the scope of practice, did you notice anything else that was difficult?
Another thing I noticed that was a bit difficult outside the practice was the communication barrier slightly, because at first my accent wasn't very easy to understand. So I'd have to make sure that I speak slowly, I enunciate my words. And after a couple of days, a couple of weeks of practicing, I was able to be well understood and to understand others better as well. And that's outside of practice, that's something else I had to adapt to really quickly. That was a little bit of struggle for me.
Right. And Adaku, did you have a similar experience as well?
To answer that question, I'll just relay a conversation I had with one of my patients. So I had this patient who just randomly asked me, do you actually get bored looking at people's eyes every day? And my response to him was, well, every eye is different. And then another second story before I just answer that question is, recently we traveled to Portugal with my son, and that was his first time of being in Portugal. And then after a day, he was like, I think people here are rude because they are not smiling. And I'm like, okay. So I had to explain to him that obviously in England, because I had my kids here, the culture, there is that cultural difference. So people smile when you look at them. But here, that they are not smiling at you doesn't mean that they are rude or they don't like you, but it's just the cultural difference. So I think the cultural difference, the way of talking, is something in every different country you go to, you have to learn and unlearn, and adapt your way of seeing your patient to suit the people or the culture, the place you've been or the place you are at the moment. I think every day I actually also experience that, like when we would go for charity work, like last year we were in Gambia, but literally most of them, 90%, weren't speaking English. So we went with some UK locums. And the first day was difficult. Then we had to get interpreters. And then by the second day, we are learning the way of breaking the ice, which was like saying assalamu alaikum and saying abraka, like thank you, and to them. And that eased them out. But then we also learned a different way of taking case histories and different ways of doing eye examination. And I think it's just the same. So the initial stages was quite little challenging because obviously you need to learn the culture, they need to smile when you meet someone, and then just learning their way of talking as well and tailoring the way you speak in such a way that it matches up. So I think it's just more or less the same way you would adapt to practice in different countries, different settings, even across the UK as well.
No, and I think that's definitely true. I've just sort of thinking I was fortunate enough to be able to do some charity work in Tibet, and just talking to the patients and respecting them, and sort of the little things, the unspoken ways of dealing with people, you do have to pick up very quickly. Otherwise, you could potentially cause offence, or your meaning isn't quite translated across. And I guess that must have been quite tricky when you first came over. It's just about making sure that your patients understood you and you understood them. And it may have taken sort of a little bit more time to do an eye test.
Yeah, that's true.
And did you sort of notice any other issues when you're practicing in the UK? Did you come across any problems from patients or from managers?
Well, basically, like I said earlier on, I think everyday practice is one day is different to the other, and every patient you see is different, and also every practice is different. And then I think life itself is full of like challenges, and to get better, we need to face these challenges, and then to get more skills, we need to just keep tailoring and adapting ourselves to new ways of dealing with circumstances. So I wouldn't say along the road of practice, I haven't met like some, you know, colleagues and managers that you struggle to kind of like get along with. But along the way, I think it's at the end of the day, it helps you develop better people management skills and greater interpersonal skills. I think that would be my take on that really, because to be fair, challenges every is constant, more or less, in our day-to-day life and practice. And then every human being is actually different, so it's just understanding where they are coming from and then trying to like, you know, relate with them that way.
And that's good. And you're right, I think a lot of the time you do need to think about intention and the place that people are coming from, just to sort of fully understand the circumstance. But have you ever had any sort of comments from patients at all?
The only sort of comments that over the years had from patients were just mainly about my accent and the way I should have to talk slowly and a bit louder. Mm-hmm. So, and that was initially when I started. And so with time, we are still able to have like good communication between the patient, me and the patient, and things go a lot better. So that's just the comments I've had from patients so far.
Right, and how about you, Daku?
To be fair, obviously I've been here, I've practiced for over 5 years now, and I've actually lost count. But I think one striking situation that I had to deal with was, I think the customer, I think I had a feedback from a customer who came for a contact lens check. I saw him, obviously. And he was like, he gave a feedback to say he was seen by a male optometrist.
Oh, no.
who was a foreigner. So I think that was the only, I think this is the particular one that I can actually, you know, some things you remember, some others you just carry on. And then I think because of the pressure sometimes that the managers in practice get with having to meet a certain standard with regards to customer feedback, I had to have a conversation with one of the managers, and she was asking me what we could do better. And I was like, I don't know. And so I think that's the only particular striking one that I can actually remember, because to be fair, is the particular one that I didn't know what I could have done better or differently. But yeah, so I think that's the only particular experience that actually stood out for me.
And yeah, and I can imagine that must have been quite unsettling at the time, really, to get that sort of feedback, and then to sort of not have the processes in place to support you going forward. But I suppose on the other side, have you had sort of some really positive experiences from patients?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Over the years, you get patients that come in and they want to see you. And then I think the scope of practice here has created an opportunity for me to be able to kind of like see some certain categories of patients. I think there was a situation where I was able to see a couple of patients, or few patients, I wouldn't say couple is like two. So a few patients with like retinal detachment, macula still on, and their sight was saved by that. And then they came back with, you know, like chocolates and things with saying thank you. And yeah, so, and then every day is like a joy with a few patients, because in practice, you just have to create room to chat with your patients, because some of them want to talk, isn't it? So that is quite fulfilling. And then also like being able to just make such a difference. I think one of the striking one for me was recently a mom came into practice and said, oh, I think I noticed a glowing light, white patch in my child's eye. And then I just looked, it was just a 4-year-old child. And then I just recognized that it's just an obvious sign of retinoblastoma. So I had to go through the referral process, and then it was quite quick for them. They were referred, obviously I work in Sheffield at the time, so they were referred from Sheffield obviously to Birmingham, and they got the treatment they required, and then she was over the moon and really excited that that happened. So yeah, so I've had very pleasant experiences with my patients.
Oh, that's an amazing story, and well done for picking that up, really. That's you don't come across that much in practice. And what about you, Chidima? Have you had any sort of really standout stories that you remember?
Yeah, so I just recall some experiences that I've had over the years. I know that whenever I trying to see a patient, so some of them, one striking question they always ask is, did you qualify in the UK, or where did you study, or where are you from? So, and initially you would notice a tone of doubt, like, am I sure she's doing the right thing? So but as soon as you start the eye test and you're done, all they'll say is, oh, you're really touring, you're very good. And most of the time there is request to see, oh, I need to see the black optometrist, the lady. So over the years they've got to accept the fact that it's just beyond being a foreigner or being new to the country or being qualified elsewhere, as long as you're very good at the practice. So I've had several cases as well where I did some prompt referral to the hospital. So I've had some patients putting positive feedbacks, and one very good experience I had recently. So I was at work trying to hand over a patient just to have their glasses made up. So someone walked in and gave me a flower. And apparently that was a patient that I saw earlier and I referred to the hospital. So she was trying to be appreciative, and they handed over the flower to me. And I've always had emails sent to the manager about positive feedback based on the practice I've done. So over the years, this has improved and made them understand that the practices of people from other countries are really optimal.
And I guess everybody's probably been guilty of it at some point when you kind of make assumptions about the doctor you see, the optometrist you see. And in your cases, it sounds like there was the initial thought was, oh, are they quite as qualified as they should be? Or I'm not sure about their practice. But I mean, it's fantastic to hear that both of you have really kind of turned that around and really gained the respect of your patients.
Yeah, definitely.
And do you find there's a difference between the patients in the UK and the patients you used to see in Nigeria?
Well, I mean, one of the things I always notice is that patients here, although they're similar, some of them here don't listen to instructions. And most of the times you would tell them to do this and then they come back the next time and still not do it. But otherwise, it's still similar kind of patients we see, and also the advice as well, so similar. So we have a higher compliance rate back home than here.
Oh, that's interesting. And I think when we were chatting before, I think you mentioned as well that they sort of almost respect their healthcare professionals a little bit more.
Yes.
Would you say that was the same at Daku?
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with that. To be fair, right now with my experience, I would say I give eye care webinars and talks when we go for community outreaches, and we encourage patients to ask questions, and then, you know, in the low-income communities, and actually want know the name of their medications, because they see their practitioner as an alpha and omega. So whatever you tell them, they actually do. They believe in what you've said and they'll do exactly what you say. So the compliance level is quite high and they don't query you, so which obviously is quite different here, which is actually also good because it gives you an opportunity to explain to your patients what you're doing or what the process end to end. And it's not like that, because most patients in the UK would have Googled their symptoms coming in. So they're already prepared with some diagnosis. And if you're not saying exactly what they are thinking, they will probably query it. So which I also like encourage some of our patients out there in the West African community to actually ask questions, because it helps for continuity of care. Because what I've realized is that sometimes you ask them, what medication did you have previously? They don't even know. What did your doctor say you have? They probably just say, oh, they said X, Y, Z, and I should just take my medication, and I've been taking that medication that way. So it's also good, because asking is knowing. Knowing, obviously, is an opportunity for you to kind of drop off or learn more. So I think it's quite right, the observation.
Gosh, that is really interesting. So in a way, it is great that back in Nigeria, they sort of listen to you. They don't consult Dr. Google first, but then on the other hand, they don't have quite the ownership that, say, patients in this country might have, because they're sort of a little bit more invested in their diagnosis and their health. Gosh, I mean, I can't even imagine what it could be like moving to a different country and practicing optometry. I think that is a huge challenge in itself. I guess you have plans for the future. Sort of how would you like your career to go?
Currently, I just registered to do the medical right now with City University London. And I would also want to do IP courses as well, and glaucoma referral courses as well. So I do love optometry, and I think I would want to be further invested in it in terms of improving my knowledge, and also doing more courses that would help me have better scope of practice and be able to also prescribe medication, be also involved in patient care as well.
Well, yeah, that's great. And I think that's exactly the higher qualifications that the college offer sort of really lend themselves to that sort of progression.
Yeah.
How about you, Adaku?
I'm just going to twist that question slightly to just match with my mantra, my belief. I always believe that the future is now. So in the past, it's easier to think the future is like the next 5 years, 10 years or 20 years. But I believe that the future is now, also, which helps me to take every opportunity I get to make an impact. So for me, the future is what I'm continuously doing, which is contributing to eye care education, continuing to add value to my patients and to people around me, continuing to just make more impact generally and improving my skills and knowledge, which I'm already doing at the moment, and taking up every opportunity presented to me to just, you know, make impact and make a difference. Because to be fair, we are the change we want to see in the world. So why not, if not? So yeah, so that's it for me. So the future is already now, and I take every opportunity to make a difference as much as I can.
Oh, I love that. The future is now. I'm going to start using that one.
Yeah.
And is that why it was important for you to sort of get involved with the charity work that you do?
Yeah, definitely. That was the reason why I dived into that, because I understood that, to be fair, I'll give this instance. I always like to tell a story before I say something. So usually when I give talks within the UK community, because we do eye care awareness within the UK, I always try to tell people to imagine you've got sight at the moment, but suddenly you begin to lose your sight. So every morning you wake up, things are more blurry than it was yesterday. And at some point you totally lose your vision. And then knowing that you are capable of actually seeing by virtue of some sort of treatment somewhere, but then you can't access that treatment just because you can't afford it. And then I also try to say, if you wear glasses, can you imagine a world where there is no optical aids? So there is no glasses, there is no contact lenses, and we just all have to live in a blur every day. So when I say that, it's just my motivation and my drive to make sure that I join and team up with the other eye care organization to make sure that we are fighting daily against avoidable sight loss, because some sight loss could have been avoided. And so many people in the low-income communities in West Africa can't afford eye care. As little as it sounds, it's just what it is. For instance, in Nigeria or in Africa mostly, there is always this wide disparity between the rich and the poor. So you see the very rich and the very poor. And the very poor, basically, they are not thinking of eye care, they are thinking of how they can feed. So they are kind of like children in the UK. NHS will always provide like free eye care, free glasses. And people in their 60s will get free eye tests, but that's not what it is in the low-income communities. And so for us, it's just supporting them in that way to be able to get or have access to eye care, as little as having glasses to enable them to see. And then one of the things that also, some of our optoms that traveled for the Gambian project last year, they were actually petrified that we couldn't refer some of the people with cataracts. Like, the cataract is properly matured, and so we can't refer them for surgery. And I was like, yeah, we can't just refer them and they get surgery done free. We have to actually like put them on a list and actually pay for them to get that surgery done, because if they can't pay for it and we can't pay for it, then they are left blind. So I think that's my motivation with regards to the charity, and daily, one eye at a time, we just join force with other eye care charities in the world to make sure that, you know, nobody has to live with sight loss, which could have been avoided.
I mean, that's incredible. I was just thinking as you were talking about how we're actually really privileged in this country, where sort of healthcare is readily available. to most people, and the disparities probably aren't quite as great as they might have been in Africa, as you describe. So that is really amazing to hear that you're actually trying to help those really underprivileged communities.
Yeah, definitely.
And is that, would you say that was sort of your driver into optometry? Is that what's kind of motivating you?
Well, I also have a story to that. Sorry, I don't, hopefully I'm not taking so much time. And so my story to that is actually my grandmom lost her sight to glaucoma. So she obviously had her independence and things, and gradually, you know, glaucoma with no signs and symptoms, she was already at the end stage when she was diagnosed. And then by the time, obviously, with compliance, treatment, whatever that was left of her vision just went quite quickly. So she lost that independence. And because she was living by herself in a quite rural area, my mom had to bring her to our house. But because she didn't live in our house, she couldn't find her way round because that was not her natural environment. So it became quite frustrating to her. So, and her children, who are like my mom, didn't know how to handle that. So they moved her back to the village because at least she lived there quite, you know, for long, most part of her life, and she can find her way around. But because she lost that independence and she was about 70 something, she didn't live much longer, so her life expectancy dropped. She became quite ill, and to be fair, at that time, you know, like in the UK, you have things to help with moods, like some medication that can help with mood, but at that time in the village, that wasn't an option. So seeing her lose her sight and then gradually, you know, die within 2-3 years kind of made me feel that I don't want anybody to lose their sight this way as much as I can. So which obviously drove me into studying optometry and then obviously getting into charity work as well. Because beyond providing eye care, I think another thing is eye care awareness. You know, talking to people about the importance of eye care is quite paramount to what we are doing, because I think generally as eye care professionals, it kind of helps 50% half the way, because if people prioritize their eye health and if people prioritize the importance of going to see their optometrist and complying with treatments, then it will help cut off like avoidable sight loss. So that was one thing that drove me into optometry. And then while in optometry, I kind of like, I love optometry. Like Chidimma said, I love optometry, definitely, because we take care of an organ of the body that is quite very, very important to our day-to-day living as humans. And giving glasses and optical aids actually makes a whole lot of difference to our patients' day-to-day life, because it gives them back their independence, better quality of life. But beyond the optical aids, we actually also look into their general health, because through the eye, we can actually pick out some changes in their health, which they probably don't know about. I'm sure we practice, we've probably seen patients with changes at the back of the eye that shows diabetes, but they are not actually diagnosed diabetic. And by referring them, we could be able to, you know, like stop that process of them probably going down with their health and then saving their sight as well. So I think optometry, I'm in love with it generally, really. So yeah, going into it, I've grown to fall in love with it as a profession.
Oh, and I think you've just summed that up really nicely, optometry generally really nicely, and how I guess most of us have come into optometry with sort of very similar sort of passions. And I know, Chidimma, you know, you said you love optometry as well. Are you feeling the same?
Yes, I feel the same. And just to add, I'm quite inspired by Daku's story and the fact that she's going to outreaches in places in West Africa as well. So I know that the eye is a window to the soul. And like she said, once you have your eyesight, you have a tendency of living a lot better and in some cases longer as well. So I love the fact that I could see a patient and then provide some solution to their eye problems. I love the fact that I can able to check or find some early signs of some eye health issues like diabetes, high blood pressure, and the fact that I give people joy because when they could see better, or when I could refer them to have their eye problems treated properly.
I love that, the fact that you want to be able to bring people joy. I mean, that's just so lovely. And, you know, we're Thank obviously you. Much richer in this country for having both of you here.
Yes.
And I guess that kind of moves on to what I wanted to talk to you about as well, is what advice would you give practitioners, say, either from Nigeria or from abroad, who want to come and practice in the UK?
So what I would advice is, I know the practice in the UK is very good and on a very high standards. So advise practitioners coming to work in the UK to study hard, be up to standard as well, and be able to use advanced equipment like the OCT, which we always use back home in Nigeria. So it was also easy for me to adapt to them here, and to have a vision where they want to be in a couple of years and where they want to be at the moment. And to also know that it might not be as easy as they would expect in terms of adapting to the culture and to adapting to seeing different cases that they might not have seen in a long time. They should also know that they might not really have, and the acceptance might not be as easy as they would expect. They might go through some subtle kind of conflict, or they might go through some discrimination, which they should be aware of, and they should persevere and know what they want. And I know that I've met a lot of excellent optometrists here in the UK, and also optometrists that are still striving as well to be better. So advise them to know where they want to be and then pursue their goal.
That's amazing advice. Would you add to that, Adaku?
Yeah, definitely. For me, I would say keep your head up, okay? Know who you are, integrate, ask questions, improve your skills. Because when you keep your head up, you keep showing up, and when you show up, you will see opportunities. And when you see opportunities, take them, okay? And when you take such opportunities, the tendency is that you could have fear of failure. But failure is another stepping stone for greatness. And there is no innovation and creativity without failure. And I think that's it for me, really, with regards to an advice or as a word of advice to any of my professional colleagues wanting to study or coming to work in the UK as an optom. So, and another thing I also want to chip in as well is don't stay alone, mingle with fellow optometrists, because testing sometimes, coming in working and testing in your testing room by yourself could feel a little bit lonely. But one thing I enjoy doing, which I recommend, is going for peer reviews, CPD events. Even when I've got the required CPD points I need, I always go for events, because it gives you an opportunity to interact with other professionals and listen to their experiences. And when you do, you actually find out that it's not much different from what you experience in practice, but then also you also learn from them, and then also they learn from you. So I think that's my advice if I'm to talk to someone coming to practice in the UK. So always keep your head up.
Oh, that's great. And I guess sort of look at it from the other side as well, what advice would you give to somebody, say like me, who had a new colleague who was joining my place of work from abroad?
What I would advise is to not to judge everybody by its cover. And I would also advise to work with the optometrists, even if they are foreigners as well, because there are a lot of things that you could learn from them. a lot of people can learn from you as well. And also to work hand in hand to be able to improve patient satisfaction and clinical experiences as well.
Amazing. What about you, Adaku? What do you think would have been really helpful for you, for your colleagues to know when you first came here?
I'll actually say be open-minded. And being open-minded is quite key to both relating with people. Like Chidinma said, don't judge a book by its cover. I was reading a book, Diary of the CEO, and he was trying to describe Elon Musk. And he said he was passing a neighborhood and he was sweating, he was trying to describe him without saying it's actually Elon Musk. So he said he was sweating, just running. And then he suddenly stopped and said hello to the neighbor and started making some jokes, which the neighbor didn't find funny. And then after that, went on to say, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that. And then he asked the question for 1 minute, did you not think that that person was someone who escaped from an asylum or a psychotic home? But what if I tell you it's Elon Musk? Now, did your perception not automatically change? You excused everything you thought in your head. So I think being open-minded would help, because it helps you learn from the person who is coming into your practice as a new colleague, understand them, be able to relate with them, understand where they are coming from, and even benefit from their wealth of knowledge and the culture or the place where they are coming from. So yeah, keeping an open mind is always key to, you know, being able to kind of relate and accept people, because you don't know who is sat in front of you. Even with patient relationship as well. So yeah,
I mean that is so true. I mean, I've learned so much from both of you, both in the conversation we've had just now, and also when we sort of chatted a little bit before. And it's so true. You know, people with different experiences can bring so much wealth into your knowledge on how the world works. Not just how the world works, how optometry is. We have different perspectives on everything, and just having those conversations, just being really open with each other and being able to share experiences, it's just enriching for everyone.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Thank you both so much for coming on iPod today. This has been a great conversation. Really, I could continue chatting to you both for a long time.
Thank you.
But I just sort of just wanted to end for our listeners, really, just to mention another sister that I came across that is a bit of a hero of mine, and that is Patricia Barth. And for those of you who don't know, she developed the first laser phaco probe, which, as you know, is still used in cataract surgery today. She was also the first female member of the Jules Stein Eye Institute, the first woman to lead a postgraduate training program in ophthalmology, and the first woman elected to the honorary staff of the UCLA Medical Center. And then she was also the first African-American to serve as a resident in ophthalmology at New York University. She was also the first African-American woman to serve on staff as a surgeon at the UCLA Medical Center. And she's the first African-American woman doctor to receive a patent for a medical purpose, and that's the phaco probe. And she's actually a holder of 5 patents, and she also founded the nonprofit American Institute for the Prevention of Blindness in Washington, D.C. So again, just somebody else in eyes that I think we should be celebrating. And exactly the right time this month, and considering it's Black History Month. But I think it's also important to remember that for all the successes that she's had, for Adaku, for Chidima's had, there's also lots of challenges that go with it. And it's just being mindful that it's not just October that these things happen, but throughout the year. And we need to kind of keep these issues in mind so that we can continue making optometry an inclusive place to work.